meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, everybody, and welcome on this, what's today, Thursday? The Pope, the Holy Father, have you been watching or listening to the...
I don't have the facilities. I am... old-fashioned.
I'll share with you some
Thank
of
you.
The...
I've been very, very impressed
with the with his exhortations, his talks, his manner. Mm. It really has been quite inspiring. Especially the talk to the bishops yesterday was just very inspiring, very inviting, mm-hmm. challenging. Inspiring and inviting. It made you want to really get into the work of the church mm-hmm. in a proper way. And then, of course, this morning he spoke to the Congress, and that was inspiring as well. But it's interesting that immediately after some of the responses have been just well, I guess not unbelievable. But I mean, I think I don't know how you can argue anything that he's saying. I really don't know how you can argue anything that he is saying. I was thinking this morning, we had the, in the gospel, Herod the Tetrarch heard about all that was happening. He was greatly perplexed because some were saying that John has been raised from the dead, and others were saying, no, Elijah has appeared, and still others, one of the ancient prophets has arisen. And Herod said, but John I beheaded. I beheaded John. And who then is this about whom I hear such things? And he kept trying to see him, to see Jesus. Herod's an interesting person, right? Because he was perplexed by a lot of things, and he was enamored with John the Baptist, yeah. even though he mm-hmm. imprisoned him. He liked what he had to say. He was listening. And as you know how the story goes, that eventually he had him beheaded, and he regretted that. He had to do it, but he made a promise, and he didn't want to embarrass himself in front of all the...
He didn't want to go back on his word.
Didn't go back on his word, and so he had him beheaded. But now he comes up again in the gospel, and now this is in reference to Jesus, and again he's perplexed, and he's wondering, who is this? From whom I hear such things, you know. These things are, it's a very interesting person, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The conflict, you can feel the conflict within him. And he kept trying to see him, I guess as I read that and heard that this morning, the gospel, I was thinking of the Holy Father being here in the United States. And, you know, well, we will speak about it often here, but, you know, the conflict and the hostilities and the angst against the church, and, you know, we talk often because we hear so often about how many people are leaving the church. In fact, I was reading a story this morning, too, that since the last papal visit, two-thirds of Catholics no longer practice the faith, don't go to Mass. It's two-thirds. We're down two-thirds. I didn't get a chance to read the whole article. I just saw that. So that's a reality. I believe that's the reality, but it's not just unique to the Catholic Church. It's really mm-hmm. all the. I know it's the same case in Judaism. Certainly, in the denominational churches, mm-hmm. it's the same thing. So we're a nation that seemingly is moving away from God, away from the laws of God, certainly, from values and principles that are in keeping with the Judeo-Christian foundation upon which the nation was built. But and yet, when the Pope comes, there is this interest. It's this interest. It's not as if, you know, you're not going to, I mean, thousands upon thousands of people are there, even at the White House. And I think they said 50,000 people were outside waiting for him. He came to the balcony at the end of the, after he spoke to the lawmakers, he came to the out to the balcony and spoke a little bit to the people. But there are 50,000 people waiting for him out there. So I don't know. What do you think about that? What's your impression on that?
People want to be in on the latest stardom. That's really, I think, the main thing.
You think so,
I think so. Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's the stuff that'll be talked about on television, and we want to be in the know. We want to be with all the other people. Whether we believe in anything that the Pope stands for doesn't matter. Just so we can say that, yeah, well, I saw him.
But, okay, I would say yes, a certain percentage of people, perhaps. But I seem to think that there's something that's inside of us. I mean, certainly there are people there in faith. You know, there's no doubt people who come in faith at the masses. I mean, there's already people leaving from Chicago to go to the to Philadelphia for the mass. And certainly there are people of faith, and they're just overly excited about being in the presence of the Pope. And it's not just about hearing what he has to say, but you can be at home and read it or watch it on the television, but just to be in the press. And I've seen this over the years, you know, all the years of my life, at least as a priest. I've so often in the presence of Pope Benedict and Pope Pope John Paul II, Pope Francis. I think I've seen him about 5 times already. And wherever, in any case, even in Rome, you know, when the pilgrims aren't there, for the most part, on the feast of the Immaculate Conception, the Holy Father comes to the Spanish Steps in that area of Poland, and he crowns this beautiful statue of the Blessed Virgin with flowers, brings flowers to the Virgin. And that's mostly the Romans who come, because that's in December, so you don't have a lot of pilgrims. And so I didn't expect that there would be so many people, but it was just mobs and mobs of people for streets. You know, they're just crowding the streets. It was, in fact, you're in the midst of all that, and you can't, you have to wait until it's over because you're not going to move until it, it's, you know. But the, gosh, I'll tell you that, just thinking about that, I was reading this morning about the stampede in Mecca. I forgot, I think maybe 700 people have died.
Wow.
And they have the, what is it, the pilgrimage to Mecca.
Oh.
Yeah, so, but anyway, I'm just saying in Rome, too, when the Pope came, just all the, you know, the people come. It's intriguing. I don't know that it's just because, it's not just for stardom or for, I think for some people.
Or it's history, too. History in the making.
History in the making.
Because this is Pope. The Pope's coming all the way from Rome to the state. That doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
And people want to be there because they want to tell their family, their children, their grandchildren, you know, I was there when the Pope came. And you hear stories when Pope John Paul came, you hear people that they're proud to say, or they get excited to tell their family members, I was there I know when Pope John Paul II came to Chicago, my father, he's short in stature, and he said when he passed through the highway by one of the parishes.
Providence of God.
The Providence of God. He said, like Zacchaeus, I climbed the tree just to see him pass, and that's what happened.
He showed me the tree that he climbed.
Yeah, so he tells us the story, and he tells everybody.
Because there's something that happened. See, and thank God the Pope came, because there's a lot that he's here. Because many people can't go to Rome. They can't make that trip.
Yes.
So this is an opportunity, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yes.
But there's something else about it. I'm saying, I think it's all that. It's all these things.
But
what is it that brings people to tears? And this happens. Even the Speaker of the House, he was kind of weeping there.
Yeah,
you know, behind, as he was behind the Pope in the hall or whatever they call that. And then there was another point, I believe it was at the balcony, and you could see that he was actually crying. And there's
it's
something.
The vicar of Christ, because he's the vicar of Christ, but it's even beyond the Pope. It's like when they asked Pope John Paul, who do they come to see? He's like, Christ, because this is not even about him. He's bringing Christ to us, yeah. God. And so that goes beyond what, you can't explain it because it's the mysticism. That's God's power.
It is. I agree with you. I think that's exactly right. Because even people who don't have the Pope, you know, from the balcony, he asked the people certainly to pray for him. And he says, and if you're not a believer, then send me your wishes. You know, send me your well wishes. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very beautiful. Mm-hmm. So acknowledging that there are those out there who do not believe, mm-hmm. but they're people of God. And in our estimation,
yes.
And so, but there's something. Yeah, it's a mystical thing. Mm-hmm. It really is. I remember the first time I saw Pope John Paul II, and we were in the St. Paul or the Paul VI auditorium because it was the audience was there. There's seats about 10,000 people. It was packed, and I remember I took a group. This was 1989, I think. So I had a large group of pilgrims, and I don't like crowds, you know, to be honest. I'm not one for crowds, and so the place was so packed, so crowded. And at the end of the exhortation, the talk, the Pope comes down the center aisle, and I thought, well, everybody then is just moving towards the center. The nuns are are notorious for.
they could run
over
you
people.
Over.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah, watch out.
but our people, the people I went, sure. they bring presents to the Pope and all that, and so I just said, I don't need to see. And I, you know, in the hall, you see him from a distance, and he was just like a little dot on the stage, so you couldn't really see much at all from where we were sitting. And I don't know if they have them now, but in those days they didn't have the screens, you know. Like now in the St. Peter's in the square, they've got screens, which is a wonderful thing too, because I participated in the midnight mass outside, and it was better than being inside because it was the big screens really gave you a sense of being really close up, right, right alongside the Pope and the altar and all that. But anyway, so the. As the Pope was coming down the aisle, I just said, "Well, I'm going to the back, outside, to the very back part of the hall, and just wait for it to be over, and then our pilgrim meet the pilgrims and take them from there to wherever we were going to go." And I got to the back and just standing there, and I turned around and there was the Pope. at some point, he got to the back and he was just a few feet away from me.
Wow.
And I was completely mesmerized because of this transparency, this light, it was a religious experience is what it was. It was a religious experience. And I guess that's what I'm saying, because I think a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people, and I've spoken to people over the years. Even when I took my nephews to Rome, or when they came to visit me in Rome, and that was the highlight of their, you know, we saw so many beautiful things, went to so many beautiful places and saw many beautiful things, but the thing that was the highlight of their experience in Rome was seeing the Pope, and they only saw him from the window.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
From the window. But it does. There's just something that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that, and you know, there's that presence, the authority, like the Pope brings hope, and I'm not talking about changing any church teachings or anything. No, it's they were interviewing this family in Cuba. I was watching the Spanish channel when Pope was in Cuba, and they were, you know, humble class people, but with a very strong faith. They were Catholics, and they said, you know, for him to come to us, it's we can't even, there's no words to explain our joy. Yeah. And it's a support to us, because she said, the lady that was being interviewed, she said, it's very hard in a country that we live in to be who we are. We're Catholic, and she said, and we are proud, and we are thankful to God that we are Catholic. And for him to come, it's a... It's like a support, like a reinforcement, confirmation of our faith. And so it's so many things.
And there's no other person in the world, really, if you think about it. There's no other person in the world, no other religious leader that does, in fact, command, in a sense, this kind of respect, kind of, even if you disagree, because not everybody agrees, and certainly after it was all over, I started reading some of the commentaries or some of the responses, and so there's some criticism. But again, I don't know how you can argue anything, really, in theory. I mean, in ideally speaking, and it, maybe that's just the ideal, because a lot of what he said was very idealistic. But at the same time, we have an obligation, a responsibility. This is what when I speak about looking to the highest standard. We've got to look to that high standard, and we've got to strive for that. And that's where because that's what keeps us in hope. It's knowing that, you know, that we have this potential, this possibility for solidarity, to work and protect the common good, to preserve and safeguard what is right and what is good in life. And so in that sense, he brings that. Now, many, many people can speak about these same things, but it's the person of the Pope, the successor of Peter, the vicar of Christ, who has, in my estimation, not just in my estimation, because the church would certainly, this teaches us, but he has a charism. He's given a charism. There's a charism. There's something given him by God that allows us to have this, this encounter with Christ, an encounter with Christ, in spite of his quirks, the quirks of Christ, because Christ is a perfection, but the Pope has his, because I've been a little bit critical of the Pope, you know, over the last couple of years, because he is a little bit different. He speaks extemporaneously, and he says things off the cuff that sometimes you just don't know, but you have to look at it within the context. And he scolds. He'll scold, which is in a right way. Sure. In fact, I would say that when he was speaking to the Congress, as well as the bishops, but especially for some reason with the Congress, it was like children sitting at the feet of the grandfather. It was like this this is how I experienced it. It was like this wise man, this grandfather, is coming and speaking to the children, the grandchildren, and I'm saying grandchildren because it's not just a father, but it was more like this man, grandfather, patriarch, who has this wealth of wisdom and common sense, even though it's idealistic, and it has to be idealistic. We've got to keep the ideal before us, but it's let's put aside the differences. Let's move away from this polarization. You know, you're speaking to the Congress, right? And the lawmakers. You got the divide between the right and the left, or the Democrats and the Republicans, or you know what? And it's the divisions are there in the politics. The divisions are there in the church. The divisions are there in the society. And how do we work all this out? Well, that's the challenge. That's the challenge. But I guess before we take a break, we'll take a break in just a second here, is that there is a charism. I think that's the thing that I find most interesting, is that as vicar of Christ, the successor of Peter, there's something that's been given to him that touches deeply, so deeply, the hearts of people. You know, the old, the young, the children. Unless you're really with a hardened heart. But see, I think even his presence has a way of softening the heart. And again, it's not unique to Francis. I saw it in Benedict. I saw it in Pope Benedict. I saw it in Pope John Paul II. It's something that softens the heart, hope, as you said, Christina, and says, wow, there's something to live for, that there's the possibility for dignity and for nobility and for grace, and that wow, God is with us. God is with us.
This is what shows how the greatness of God, how much he loves us, because it shows how he's involved in the lives of his children, and he uses everyone, the Pope, all of those who are predisposed to God's grace and all the the love that he wants to give everyone, because there's so many people out there that are so wounded. We're all wounded.
Sure.
And just that hope and that love, and that shows the greatness and the power of God and how he is so alive today.
Yeah. Absolutely. We're going to take a break, this idea of woundedness, because he refers to that. So we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about what he said to the Congress, and then I'll try to, if not today, tomorrow, get into his talk to the bishops, because I was so moved by what he said to the bishops, and it was so deeply, talk about mystical. Mm-hmm. It was so, you just felt so, he was so imbued with the Spirit of God, and that it was really talking about, you know, you listen to this, you want to attain to high sanctity, to authenticity, to have this intimate, deep and intimate relationship with Christ. And he calls us to that. He calls us to that. He reminds us that the Lord wants this intimacy, to walk with us in intimacy, in friendship, a deep friendship, deeper than any other friendship we have, any other relationship we have. Our deepest and most profound and most beautiful relationship is our relationship with God, which is mysterious in and of itself. All right, we'll be right back. I'm listening to Listener Support Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Polish immigrants in the late 1800s started churches more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.com. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.com. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's. One church, many cultures. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. St. Stan's is a school for families who want their child to be in a real-world diverse setting with children of mixed races, ethnicities, and cultures, religions, and socioeconomic backgrounds, and where they will not only be empowered to excel in reading, math, and science, but also leadership, social, and emotional skills that will help them succeed in whatever they do for the years to come. St. Stan's School has the programs to make that possible. Our teachers have worked diligently to create a robust and innovative curriculum. But in today's constantly evolving world, simply knowing how to solve math problems isn't enough. When it comes to succeeding in school or later in life, research shows social and emotional intelligence has become more important than ever. This is why the heart of St. Stan's experience lies in our unique blend of social and academic learning. As a community of faith and leadership, St. Stan's challenges our students to achieve academic and social excellence, to lead courageously by action and example, and to serve and love God through others. St. Stan's School equips your child with tools they need to excel in whatever they do. We have programs such as the Leader in Me program, based upon Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Second Step Social-Emotional Curriculum, the Reading and Writing program of Columbia University, the University of Chicago's Everyday Math, and hands-on approach to K-8 Next Generation Science Standards. Learn, lead, love. Join the St. Stan's family. We're accepting applications for the 2015-2016 school year. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560 or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Part of the Wicker Park, Westtown, and Bucktown community. For more information about St. Stan's School, visit ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us. We're speaking about the Pope's, the Holy Father's visitation here to the United States. He's in Washington, D.C. this morning. He spoke to the Congress, and all the lawmakers. I don't know if the Senate, I guess everybody was there, right? Mm-hmm. And yesterday I was so inspired by his talk to the bishops. But Tony, do you want to say something? Because we were talking during the break.
Yeah. Unfortunately, and again, I look for this hour because I want to look at his words and just the experience through the eyes of faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I come home late, so I don't really get the, you know all the news. I'm hearing all the mockery and all the taking his words and making it people's, getting what he's trying to say, but not really through the eyes of faith, you know. And it's a little, it brings me down. It really does.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's almost like, and you hear it all the time, people with faith don't see the Pope as a rock star, you know.
Right.
He's Jesus. You were talking about how people cry and people are emotional. Yeah, because to us, he's, you look at through the eyes of Jesus. I mean, but there's others out there that, it's just the fame thing. It's almost, it makes me feel as if it's like with anything in the world, it's passing, It's that, mm-hmm. Oh, wow, he's here. Let's mm-hmm. make fun of him. He's our boy. You know what I mean? Right. This is great. Finally, a pope that's going to do and change and be what we want him to. The pope is not to be what we want him to. Mm-hmm. The pope is the pope, the vicar of Christ. I mean, it's just...
So it's the political stuff that...
Right. Some of the things he said, he has that way of getting trapped into certain things. It's like if he says something, people are always going to pick out the things that apply to them. It's almost like, I sat here for a little bit thinking, it's almost like our political figures. We like them because they're saying some of the things we like, but you don't really know what they're saying. You don't really know a lot of them what they're thinking. And then we think of this Donald Trump for a minute. He's really saying things that I think people are saying, but he's not really thinking about the things he's saying. And there's not a real concrete, what can we do?
Sure.
You almost have to today kind of take the words, and like I'm glad we're going to start talking about the words of the Pope right now. You almost take and savor them, mold them around in your head, and really think about what's being said.
Well, let's look at that because I'm saying that as I listen to him, and I think it's one thing to be there and listen to him, to be in the presence in a sense, even if it's via the television, but or the internet, but to be in the presence and to, as you said, as people of faith, mm-hmm. as a Catholic, as a believing Catholic, as a man of God, mm-hmm. having relationship with the Lord, mm-hmm. then I sit there and I listen and say, okay, you can't. Politics aside,
right.
There's a truth that's being spoken now. People can take and use and whatever. Mm-hmm. But what he, one of the things is, so this is this morning as he spoke, he, and it's interesting too that afterwards, I checked the other commentaries immediately afterwards, and depending on where you were coming from, whether from the right or from the left, it's exactly they pick and choose or they highlight mm-hmm. what mm-hmm. serves their own purpose. Mm-hmm. But he began by saying that he's very grateful for the invitation to address the joint session of Congress in the land of the free and the home of the brave. And he mentions that he too is a son of this great continent. So he's looking beyond just the United States, mm-hmm. but the whole continent, the whole mm-hmm. of Americas, the Americas. And then he really stressed, this sense of mission and personal and social responsibility and, the need to grow as a nation, to defend and preserve the dignity of our fellow citizens, and in the pursuit of the common good. He kept going back to this idea of the common good, especially those in situations of greater vulnerability or risk, and that legislative activity is always based on care for the people. Mm. Because to this, the politicians have been invited, called, and convened by those who elect them, to care for the people. To protect the common good. And then he spoke about the two ways that their work is brings him to reflect in two ways on the figure of Moses. On the one hand, he said, the patriarch and lawgiver of the people of Israel symbolizes the need of peoples to keep alive their sense of unity by means of just legislation. Now, this idea of unity, you know, Jesus pleaded for this the night before he died. And we're a very divided people today, very divided, more divided than any time in my life that I know of. And so he speaks about that. Now, also Moses, who leads us directly to God and thus to the transcendent dignity of a human being, that Moses provides us with a good synthesis of work, of the work of these politicians. He says, you are asked to protect, by means of the law, the image and likeness fashioned by God on every human face. So I think there, you know, it's just the idea that we've got to see the whole of humanity. And then he'll build on that. You know, he talks about the need to enter into dialogue. He speaks a lot about dialogue and encounter. And he says, dialogue with many elderly persons who are a storehouse of wisdom forged by experience and who seek in many ways, especially through volunteer work, to share their stories and their insights. He says many of them are retired, but still very active. And so he acknowledges the need to go to them for the wisdom that they can bring, their insight, their experience, their life experience. Also to the young who are working to realize their great noble aspirations. So he put an emphasis on the retired, the elderly, and the young. And he always does this. I remember when he began his papacy, even as he spoke to the cardinals, he says, you know, don't underestimate, you know, the wisdom you have from your experience. You know, like wine, he says, he made reference to the wine. It gets better with the years as it ages. Mm-hmm. And then he mentions four Americans: Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Dorothy Day, and Thomas Merton. Abraham Lincoln, the guardian of liberty, who labored tirelessly that this nation under God might have a new birth of freedom. As building a future of freedom requires love for the common good and cooperation in a spirit of subsidiarity and solidarity. And he talked about the very disturbing social and political situation of the world today, that the world is increasingly a place of violent conflict, hatred, brutal atrocities committed even in the name of God and of religion. And he says, we know that no religion is immune from forms of individual delusion or ideological extremism. This means that we must be especially attentive to every type of fundamentalism, whether religious or of any other kind, as a delicate balance is required to combat violence perpetrated in the name of freedom or in the name of religion, an ideology, or an economic system, while also safeguarding religious freedom, intellectual freedom, and individual freedoms. But he said there's another temptation which we have to especially guard against, and that's the simplistic reductionism of which sees only good or evil. And it's very black and white. Mm-hmm. It's either good or it's evil. The righteous and the sinners. He says the contemporary world with its open wounds, as he speaks about the wounds, with its open wounds, which affect so many of our brothers and sisters, demands that we confront every form of polarization which would divide it into these two camps. Now, he says that we know that the attempt to be freed from the enemy without, or how he says this, he says, we know that in the attempt to be freed from the enemy without, we can be tempted to be fed to feed the enemy within us. I think that's a very important point, you know, to imitate the hatred and violence of tyrants and murderers is the best way to take their place. That is something which you, as a people, must reject. So that it's important that we not that in order to free ourselves from the enemy that is out there, that we feed the enemy within us. It's a very powerful statement, I thought. He says our response has to be instead one of hope and healing, peace and justice. Okay, now this is the question is, how do you do that? How do you do that? Because we're really dealing with some very, very issues that really threaten the well-being of the civilization we live in. It's not just the terrorists, extremism, fundamentalism, but it's also the idolatry, the idolatry of the, I always call it the pop culture or the nurturing of narcissism. These are major threats to the well-being of society, to the future of our civilization. So he talks about this need to respond with hope and healing, peace and justice, to summon the courage and the intelligence to resolve today's many geopolitical and economic crises, even in the developed world and all that. He'll go on to that. And this need for solidarity, fraternity and solidarity, cooperating generously for the common good, you know. And he speaks of the challenges facing us today call for a renewal of that spirit of cooperation, which has accomplished so much good in the history of the United States. The complexity, the gravity, the urgency of these challenges demand that we pool our resources and talents. We resolve to support one another with respect for our differences and our convictions of conscience. So he's very much aware of the polarization, the division that is ever present in the political arena of our nation, mm-hmm. and it's in the church as well. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere, and he says we gotta begin to dialogue and pull ourselves together in unity, and in doing so, he speaks about how the voice of faith has to be heard. You know, again, fraternity and love, which tries to bring out the best in each person and in each society. We have to battle to eliminate the new global forms of slavery born of grave injustices, which can overcome only through new policies and new forms of social consensus. I'm just trying to pull out some of the stuff that he was saying. And he says, I think that the political history of the United States, where democracy is deeply rooted in the mind of the American people, he says all the political activity must serve and promote the good of the human person and be based on respect for his or her dignity. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. And so the politics must truly be at the service of the human person, that we cannot allow ourselves to be slaves to the economy and to finance. We got to rise above that. The need for sacrifice. He mentions Martin Luther King and the dream, his campaign to fulfill this dream of full civil and political rights for African Americans. He says that dream continues to inspire us all. And he goes on and on about that. And then he gets into the thing with the immigrants, which is a very sensitive subject today, you know. Mm-hmm. But he says in recent centuries, he says, millions of people came to this land to pursue their dream of building a future and freedom. He says, we the people of this continent, again, it's interesting how he identifies himself as part of this continent, are not fearful of foreigners because most of us were once foreigners. He says, I say this to you as the son of immigrants, knowing that so many of you are also descended from immigrants. Tragically, the rights of those who were here long before us were not always respected for those peoples and their nations. Let's see, for those peoples and their nations from the heart of American democracy, I wish to reaffirm my highest esteem and appreciation. Let's see, I kind of took this out of context, didn't I? He says, I wish to reaffirm my highest esteem and appreciation those first contacts were often turbulent and violent. He's speaking about the mm-hmm. founding of the nation, the mm-hmm. beginning of the nation. But it is difficult to judge the past by the criteria of the present. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, when the stranger in our midst appeals to us, we must not repeat the sins and the errors of the past. We must resolve now to live as nobly and as justly as possible as we educate new generations not to turn their back on our neighbors and everything around us, building a nation calls us to recognize that we must constantly relate to others, rejecting the mindset of hostility in order to adopt one of reciprocal subsidiarity. So he says, the world is facing a refuge crisis of a magnitude not seen since the Second World War, and this presents us with great challenges and many hard decisions. On this continent, too, thousands of persons are led to travel north in search of a better life for themselves and for their loved ones, in search of greater opportunities. Is this not what we want for our own children? We must not be taken aback by their numbers, but rather view them as persons, seeing their faces, listening to their stories, trying to respond as best as we can to their situation, to respond in a way which is always humane, just, and fraternal. We need to avoid a common temptation nowadays to discard whatever proves troublesome. Let us remember the golden rule: do not do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So that's, and that's a sensitive but subject, because we have no border. He's not saying that we don't protect the borders, but the fact is, if we don't, we're responsible, in a sense, for those who come across that border. There's, we can, you know, certainly a nation can manage. Every nation does. And I think part of the problem today is that people feel that there is no border. And in essence, there really isn't, you know. And so, but the point is, the government has a responsibility to protect its people, its nation, its culture. But people are people. And the Pope, you can't argue this from a biblical worldview, that people have to be respected, and we have to work to bring the best out of them and to care for our brothers and sisters, because the church has no boundaries. A nation has to have boundaries, no doubt, but the church has no boundaries. And anyway, we'll take a break. We'll come back and continue with this. So don't go away. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to the Support of Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.com. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.com. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's. One church, many cultures. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
The best candidate for marriage is the very person who would be a good candidate for monasticism. And the best candidate for monasticism would be the very person who would be a good candidate for marriage. I'm Father Thomas J. Loy with a Theology of the Body moment for the Tabor Life Institute. Celibacy and marriage are not other. They're actually two sides of the same coin. Marriage and celibacy are both choices to make a gift of self, to live spousally. Happy marriages are those element of the monastic in them, prayer, dying to self, and a sense of belonging ultimately to God. A celibate is happiest when he or she lives their celibacy spousally, making a gift of self to God and to others. The married couple reminds the celibate of the spousal dimension of his or her celibacy. The celibate reminds the married couple of the sacramental nature of their marriage. To find out more about the theology of the body, visit taborlife.org. Taborlife.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us. I'm going to, because we only have about 15 minutes, I want to try to go through this as best as I can. And this is the words, the Pope's address to the Congress and really to the whole nation. But he before the break, he reminded us of the golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now, you just can't argue this. It's all from the Bible. The rule points us to in a clear direction. Let us treat others with the same passion, the same compassion, passion and compassion with which we want to be treated. Let us seek for others the same possibilities which we seek for ourselves. Let us help others to grow as we would help ourselves. In a word, if we want security, let us give security. If we want life, let us give life. If we want opportunities, let us provide opportunities. And then he said something that I thought was very profound, but it's not something we haven't heard, but we need to be reminded. The yardstick we use for others will be the yardstick which time will use for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's good.
So the Golden Rule also reminds us of our responsibility to protect and defend human life at every stage of its development, every stage of its development. And then he was very pointed about the death penalty. And he says, the conviction has led me from the beginning of my ministry to advocate at different levels for the global abolition of the death penalty. And he goes on about the, you know, the sacredness of life and the fact that we must, society can only benefit from the rehabilitation of those convicted of crimes. I know that's going to be a very sticky subject for many, especially those who have suffered the violence in a very personal, very deep way. It takes great courage and great faith to be able to say to somebody, you know, like Jesus did from the cross, Father, forgive them.
Yeah.
You know, they know not what they do. Then he mentioned the servant of God, Dorothy Day, who founded Catholic Worker Movement, her social activism, her passion for justice, for the cause of the oppressed. And he talked about, in that context, those who are trapped in a cycle of poverty, that they too need to be given hope. The fight against poverty and hunger must be fought constantly on many fronts, especially in its causes. And then he went into the thing about the effort, the creation. He says it goes without saying that part of this great effort is the creation and distribution of wealth, the right use of natural resources, the proper application of technology, and the harnessing of the spirit of enterprise are essential elements of the economy, which seeks to be modern, inclusive, and sustainable. Business is a noble vocation directed to producing wealth and improving the world. It can be a fruitful source of prosperity for the area in which it operates, especially if it sees the creation of jobs as an essential part of its service to the common good. Can't argue that. Mm-mm. And that's not anti-capitalism, is it?
No.
As people would accuse him. He does talk about the common good also includes the earth. This is a very central theme of his encyclical. And that we enter into dialogue with all people about our common home. He says we need a conversation which includes everybody, since the environmental challenge we are undergoing and its human roots concern and affect all of us. So, let's see. Again, it comes back to this combating poverty, restoring dignity to the excluded. He speaks about the Thomas Merton, a great spiritual inspiration for many, who was born during the First Great War, and speaks about this pointless slaughter, or he referred to Benedict the 15th, who spoke termed a pointless slaughter, the First World War, and he quoted the Pope Francis quoted Thomas Merton, who writes, I came into the world free by nature in the image of God. I was nevertheless the prisoner of my own violence and my own selfishness in the image of the world into which I was born. The world was the picture of hell, full of men like myself, loving God and yet hating him, born to love him, living instead in fear of hopeless, self-contradictory hungers. And so Merton, being a man of prayer, a thinker, challenged the certitudes of his time and opened new horizons for souls and for the church. He was a man of dialogue, a promoter of peace between peoples and religions. And he talks about he feels his responsibility to build bridges, to help all men and women. Again, he talks about the need for that we go down a path of dialogue, which may have been interrupted by most legitimate of reasons, but that new opportunities to open. This is, I think, where he's making reference perhaps to the this opening up to Cuba and all that. He didn't mention Cuba. He didn't mention Iran. He talked about armed conflicts throughout the world, and that we have to ask ourselves, why are deadly weapons being sold to those who plan to inflict untold suffering on individuals and society? Is it sadly the answer, as we all know, is simply for money, money that is drenched in blood, yeah. often innocent blood. In the face of this shameful and culpable silence, it is our duty to confront the problem and to stop the arms trade. Mm-hmm. And then again, he made reference again to Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln, liberty, Martin Luther King, liberty and plurality and non-exclusion, Dorothy Day, social justice and the rights of persons, and Thomas Merton, the capacity for dialogue and openness to God. And then I thought it was interesting that he ended, I'm just kind of skimming through his, but he ended in a very, very strong way. He says, it is my wish that throughout my visit, the family should be a recurrent theme. How essential the family has been to the building of this country, and how worthy it remains of our support and encouragement. Yet I cannot hide my concern for the family, which is threatened, perhaps as never before, from within and without. Fundamental relationships are being called into question, as is the very basis of marriage in the family. I can only reiterate the impulse, the richness and the beauty of human family. And see, he's going to build on this, I'm certain, because he's going to be wonderful. Mm-hmm. And in particular, he says, I'd like to call attention to those family members most vulnerable, the young. For many of them, for the young, a future filled with countless possibilities beckons, yet so many others seem disoriented and aimless, trapped in a hopeless maze of violence, abuse, and despair. Their problems are our problems. We cannot avoid them. We need to face them together, to talk about them and to seek effective solutions rather than getting bogged down in discussions. He says, at the risk of oversimplifying, we might say that we live in a culture which pressures young people not to start a family.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
Because they lack possibilities for the future. Yet this same culture presents others with so many options that they too are dissuaded from starting a family. So he's really pointing the crisis in the family. Anyway, that's basically a summation of what the Pope said. What do you think about that, Tony?
I wish you would have started with what you ended with, but it's again, I can see even myself, I'm picking out things, and I think that's what people are going to do, but overall, that is a good, that's,
I mean,
what we believe.
You can't argue.
You can't.
The question is, you know, because it is the much of this is the mm-hmm. ideal.
Mm-hmm.
As Christians, we're called to the ideal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the, you know, practical application, how do you safeguard, how do you protect and safeguard a civilization, a nation, mm-hmm. a marriage, a family? What do we do?
See, I wish he would have been stronger with that, giving, you know, I mean, a blanket speech is beautiful, but I think talking to Congress, I mean, I think it could have been a little stronger.
That's interesting. Okay. I
wish it would have been a little stronger, and I could be coming from my own anger, because like I said, I just been a little angry lately, but I want to hear something stronger. I think we need something stronger today.
So I think what we have to do is, I think we've got to listen closely to what he says.
Yes.
To the church.
And I think much more is coming. I honestly hope. I think this was the beginning, mm-hmm. and I almost wish that he could have gone to different states too, but I know Philadelphia is the family. But I think much more should be coming. And if anything, I hope he walks away saying much more is needed.
Well, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how he speaks about the family. Now, this is on the eve, the mm-hmm. vigil of the Synod on the family, because right. when he goes back to Rome in October, I think the mm-hmm. October 4th, mm-hmm. the Synod on the family begins. And we've all been kind of waiting and wondering what's going to happen. But he, so we have to listen very closely to what he's going to be saying in the next few days. Tomorrow, perhaps, I'll go through his talk to the bishops, because that was, that he's speaking to the church,
right,
specifically. And it's very, very, as I said, very beautiful, very inspiring.
It's probably
very
deeper,
challenging.
Deeper?
Spiritually speaking.
Spiritually, yeah. Because that's it. It also, Tony, I wanted to say the audience depends on what audience you're talking to. Congress, well, we all know Congress.
I think what he's saying, he's basically stating there's this polarization, this division. It's here. It's everywhere. And we've got to begin again to dialogue and to, you know, pull ourselves together in a unity that serves then the common good. And so, you know, again, he didn't just take the immigration question, because that's a sensitive issue today. It's in Europe, it's a very sensitive issue. In the United States, a nation must protect its border. I think anybody with a brain in their head would understand that a nation must protect its borders. I remember when I went to Italy just for a year. I mean, it took forever to get the visa to go. But at the same time, the church has no borders. And so the church, he spoke about this, I don't know if it was to the, it was perhaps to the bishops, I think it was, or maybe it was in this address. He spoke about the church has done more for immigrant people than any other institution in the nation. I speak Spanish, I do Polish Mass, you know, we find ways to integrate. I say integrate because we respect the customs and the language and the traditions of a people, and try to learn, you know, a mutual sharing of the richness of life. But at the same time, we have to be one people. We have to assimilate to a large extent while preserving and protecting our identities. But we still have to assimilate. Where there is no assimilation, there's a major problem. And I think this is a question that the West is feeling, especially with the influx of the Muslims, you know, it's a question: can there be this assimilation? Can we assimilate? Will they? The point is, and we're at the end of the hour. These are sensitive issues. That's just one to point out. But but he did speak strongly about the family. We'll listen. In these days, we really have to listen to what he's saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's we're out of. Tony, thanks for the challenge there.
Because sorry,
no, I think it's
not in a good place.
It's valid. It's all right. We're done for today. We'll be back. Well, we're not really done. We got a lot more to do.
A lot more to do.
We will be back tomorrow. Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Ciao.
Time to hide the wind.